buys initially eliminated prescriptions, and that was restored through the sixth special session. Managed care plans, because of the concern of their ability to actually manage without those services, most of them did opt to drop the standard population from coverage. And so our managed care enrollment for the OHP standard population dropped from 83% to 39% because of the loss of managed care. And then that, in turn, increases costs. Managed care saves money for us. A second component is just increased costs in the OHP plus population due to increases in utilization. And then kind of the last catch-all category, a number of different management actions that had been taken did not get us the save. Some got us the savings, but some of them did not get to the anticipated savings were include disease management initiative, preferred drug program, and changes in the pharmacy reimbursement level. Originally, we had planned on going to AWP, my average wholesale price, minus 17%, and we did in the end go to average wholesale price minus 15% for non-institutional pharmacies and AWP. Average wholesale price, minus 11% for institutional pharmacies. The other management action that we were not able to undertake that had been assumed in our savings was to move away from cost-based reimbursement for type A and type B hospitals that required a statutory change that wasn't forthcoming.
Representative Smith.
Thank you. What was the rationale for the change in reimbursements to type A and type B hospitals?
Madam Chair and Representative Smith, type A hospitals are less than 50 beds, more than 30 miles to another facility. Type B hospitals are less than 50 beds, less than 30 miles from another facility. So there are about, I think, 30 hospitals out of the 58 hospitals in this state that are either type A or type B hospitals. We are required by statute to provide full cost reimbursement. So whatever they spend, we are required to pay, as opposed to other hospitals where there are cost containment measures we pay based on a diagnosis-related group, which provides some cost incentives there for hospitals to contain costs. Given the revenue situation we are in, we have proposed taking both type A and type B hospitals to the same place where we had the other 28 hospitals in this state, and that is to provide, again, having less revenues, can we afford to continue full cost-based reimbursement for over the half the hospitals in the state? Again, I think there's a mixed A and B hospitals are mixed bag. There are some, first of all, type A hospitals, again, because of their distance, tend to be more hospitals that are in more remote or rural areas. Type B hospitals in many cases are what might be considered suburban hospitals, so Newburgh, Silverton, Dallas, some of those. You have some type A's and some type B's that are reliant on cost-based reimbursement. You have other A's and B's that are doing quite well. That may be, in fact, I think one of them is one of the most profitable hospitals in the state. So I think we're really in a situation where perhaps the having the type A and type B does not really reflect the financial need, that those classifications, and perhaps there's a different way we need to look at this. Having said that, again, what we had proposed putting on, what we had put on the table for one of our ways to deal with, I can't remember it. It must have been Measure 28, was to eliminate that cost-based reimbursement, and that bill did not move forward. So we have not done that.
Thank you.
On the savings side, so those were some of the major problems on the health plan.
Senator Shield.
Mm-hmm. I hesitated to ask a question myself, but when I look at the last sentence on page one that says the main component of the problem results from managed care enrollment for OHP standard population declining from 83 to 39% because of the loss of plan participation when benefits were reduced. That's, I think, a terribly sanitized way of saying something, and I kind of wanted you to put some flesh and blood on that.
Okay.
Brad, if you would.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Senator Shields. We had up until Measure 28, We had to, let me back up. As you know, we moved and had planned on moving before any of the deficits we found ourselves in to what we called Oregon Health Plan 2 as of February 1, so where we would move adults who are only eligible for Medicaid because of the waivers we've had in place since the early 90s into a different benefit package, a reduced benefit package with mandatory copays, and that was to occur February 1. We had said to our managed care plans, if you're in for one group, you're in for both groups. You can't pick and choose and say, well, I want to take OHP Plus, but I don't want to take OHP Standard. We had said you need to take both. We had one instance where we had to move away from that because we were in the situation of potentially losing our entire provider panel for the OHP Plus population. But when benefits were further reduced so that plans no longer had, and I think dental is somewhat separate, but plans no longer had the ability to provide medical supplies, no longer was outpatient mental health available, even that's carved out to a separate managed care plan, no longer had outpatient chemical dependency services available, and initially no longer had prescription drugs available. The plans basically said, you're putting us at risk because you pay us a capitation payment and we have to manage this, but yet we're not able to provide some of the services that will actually help us manage this population. And even though in the capitation payments there was an offset, assuming, for instance, if there's less mental health, there may be more hospital utilization, we did say at that point to the plans, you can have the option. You can decide that you only want to serve the plus population. And most plans, well, we kind of went back and forth. Originally, drugs were out. We had most plans, I think there were just a few plans that said we'll continue to serve OHP Plus. When you put prescriptions back in, a couple of them reversed. But still what we had is a majority of OHP standard clients who are being served in managed care no longer had managed care. And so because the services weren't there, in most cases for plans to say they felt they could really manage that care, that moves their costs then to fee-for-service, which is more costly for us because people they get their services in the hospital emergency room, which is more costly. Okay. On the savings side,
How much time do we have to ask questions?
We don't, because I'm going to start. We have to get this plan approved today. So yeah, I wish you'd hold some of your questions, particularly let Jean get through her narrative so that we can get to detail. The rebalance has to be voted on today, members. Either that or we stay until 5 this evening. Go ahead, Jean.
Okay. Thank you. On the health plan, on the savings side, we have had reprojections of caseload since the November rebalance. And that really is the major component of savings. We have about $22 million of general fund savings. The forecast is caseloads is 6% lower than it was in November. Almost across the board, a lowering of caseloads, and particularly a lowering in what is now the OHP standard. As I just mentioned, there was quite a cutback in services. And we had also moved to a new policy. Although we had required payment of premiums since, I believe it was 1997 for this population, we had had a much more lenient policy based on what the federal government required us. What we'd moved to with these new waivers was a much stricter policy that looks much more like a commercial insurance plan, which if you don't pay your premiums, you lose your coverage. There's, in essence, about a 60-day grace period. We originally were going to have the first imposition of that, really with the February premiums they had until late March to pay. We were going to move people off who hadn't paid April 1. There had been, there was a lot of client confusion, and I think it was all tied in with what was a lot of other program cuts that were occurring, so we moved that till May 1, As you may have seen in the paper the other day, about 10,000 clients did lose coverage May 1 due to non-payment of premiums. So we do have caseload reductions, again, pretty much across the board, but especially in OHP standard. So, again, there's about $22 million of general fund savings there because of a reprojection of caseloads. Moving on to children, adults, and families, the bottom line is a net impact of about $500,000 of general fund savings. At the same time, we've had continued growth in the food stamp program. Food stamp is 100% federal funds on the program side. What we are not requesting, continuing to not request, though, are the staff that would go along with that. Staff would be 50% general fund, 50% federal funds. In essence, as part of our plan to try to balance this budget, we're going to continue to try to make do with the staff that we have. If we had requested, that would require another 145 positions. Moving on to long-term care caseloads. We have a number of, I guess you would say, problems in that arena. As you know, we eliminated coverage for levels 15 through 17 as of February 1, and then 12 through 14 as of April 1. All of those clients were reassessed to determine whether or not they really fit into those levels. Many of them were found not to, so we had fewer people. Actually, more people remaining in the program than we have projected, so we have both some caseload and cost per case issues there. For client-employed providers, which are a main source of services for those in levels 15 through 17, because the state self-insures for unemployment insurance, we had to pay unemployment insurance for those people who were no longer providing services to those levels. And also our estate's recoveries are lower than we had last projected. Moving on to the remaining area of health services, we had a net revenue shortfall in other funds available to the Oregon State Hospital of $10.5 million. The net is $10.5 million general fund. This is really an issue, and I think Mr. Britton in his write-up goes back to an issue that had been hanging around since 1999-01 biennium, involving some transfers that were assumed to be occurring between the Oregon Health Plan and uses of the state hospital. It wasn't until recently that there was a discovery that the revenues that had been projected to be there weren't there. It's a fairly long, complicated scenario, which Mr. Britton has written up in his write-up. I will say that this has been a concern of ours, and I think with Margie coming into this role, this was a particular concern of hers before of whether or not we were really matching up our revenue system with our budget system. We now have a revenue tracker in place that I think since Margie has come into finance and policy analysis and working with the accounting staff to see that this kind of problem does not occur in the future. Part of the problem has been offset. Again, the net is a $10.5 million problem. It was greater than that, but it's also been offset by some increased federal funds we were able to bring in. Lastly, as I noted at the beginning, actually, department-wide, and it's broken out in more detail in some of the attachments, but department-wide, as we now have rolled up, what are the savings that we would project in personal services costs from holding positions vacant? There is a $17.8 million general fund savings in 0103 that then has been applied against the problems we've had in the department. So the bottom line is about $2.3 million to the good that we would project at this point in the biennium.
That's the first since I've been chairing and have been hearing the rebalances, Jean.
I wish I could say I could take responsibility. It just happened.
You want to spend some time on the summary of some of them, and I don't know whether the committee has had an opportunity to look at the summary. If you have and you don't have any questions, if not, I can ask the agency to walk through them.
Please walk through, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'm going to take and I don't know if you want every single line. I will try to point out some of the highlights on here. And if you get into detailed questions, I will probably have to call on others here. Again, if you're looking at Attachment A, the first issue, as you'll note, is the administrative savings from the hiring freeze and hiring delays. Within the former Adult and Family Services, I noted the food stamp expenditures and caseloads, and those are federal funds. The Emergency Assistance Program, we closed down the program from one of the actions. I think it was actually November rebalance. The expenditures exceeded what had been assumed at that point because bills were still coming in by $0.2 million. At the same time, the Domestic Violence Emergency Assistance Program has continued, and we have a slightly higher caseload and a higher than anticipated cost per case. So that is creates a problem. Some of the others are some of the cost per cases under temporary assistance needy families running slightly below authority. Again, some of these are some adjustments. Jobs program expenditures projected to be lower than the current budgeted amount. Services to children and families, trust fund collections, this is from Children's Trust Fund, are lower than anticipated, so that's about a $2 million problem. At the same time, we had additional federal revenues coming in under Title IV-B of $1.8 million, so that offsets some of the other problem. Moving on to seniors and disabled services, we are required, as we move clients out of substitute care, as we've eliminated coverage in levels 14 through 17, the federal government has required us to provide community transition services. So these costs weren't included in our original proposal. It's about $170,000 of general fund. I mentioned unemployment insurance claims for client employee providers of a little over $1 million. The next two, the substitute homes and the in-home client services, there you have a combination of about a little over $3 million of problem, which is both an issue of, again, having, fewer people lose services in levels 14 through, or levels 12 through 17, excuse me, than we had originally projected. Estate collections, I had mentioned that before. Again, we have some smaller revised estimates there, including nursing facilities decrease. On the developmental disability side, we have some of our expenditures. I believe it's out of Eastern Oregon Training Center. When patients there need some out-of-institution medical care, we just are experiencing some costs higher than originally projected. Under public health, we're requesting some position authority and other funds limitation for a grant from Robert Wood Johnson Foundation to improve oral health services for mothers and young children. You'll see a $4 million, which, as I understand, was actually a double counting, of $4 million reduced revenues, which was a result of the discontinuation of the tobacco prevention program during, I think it began in April. That was part of the special session six actions. Oregon Health Plan, other medical assistance programs, a number of things here. We have higher number of Medicare buy-in eligibles, and that we pay for those who are duly eligible for Medicare and Medicaid. We pay for their premiums. And in some cases, there are co-pays and deductibles. So you can see we have some increases there, about $800,000. The managed care enrollment for the OHP standard, I had mentioned that before. So that's about an $8 million problem. Cost estimates for the OHP plus population is primarily due to increased utilization on the fee-for-service side. And also we had some claims lag for OHP standard together. That's about a $10 million problem. Because we had somewhat fewer OHP, I mentioned our caseload is somewhat below where we had anticipated. Our copays had been anticipated at a higher, based on that higher caseload. So there, again, we have somewhat of a problem because the copay savings had not been adjusted for that. Some of our previous management actions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the flip-flop on getting OHP standard out of managed care and into fee-for-service, and look at these figures, if those services that the managed care organizations had said we must have to manage people had been maintained, what would our loss have been at that time? Was it, you're talking sort of a situation here where if you put them all back in with the managed care tools they want, that's a very expensive program. Doing it this way, you still lose money. Which way do you lose the least amount of money? I'm not talking about access or quality of care, but there's a curve here in which you're now losing money, costing you more to manage the ones that have stayed in standard, but it would have cost you something more to keep them in managed care and add their services in. Have you calculated which way is the best way we should have gone?
Madam Chair and Representative Bates, in essence, if we could have kept them in managed care, we would have, even with the reduced benefits, we would have saved more money. And so this is a bottom line we have, and I'm not sure whether within the $10 million or the $8 million we actually pick up something, which is that when they move out of managed care, there's a one-month. Managed care is prepaid, fee-for-service we pay after the fact, so that's factored in there that we picked up some savings, if you want to call it that, and I do put it in quotes, just because of a lag, but then it's more costly because people are receiving more costly services. I don't know if that answered your question.
We'll talk about it in private.
Okay.
I don't think everybody's talking about that.
Okay. Moving on, pharmacy lock-in, which was actually a program that I think came out of the 2001 session. We phased that in, and we had somewhat over-projected the savings that we would get on there, so we have about a $500,000 problem. Disease management, that was another, that may have been, I'm not sure if it was a 2001 action or if it was one of the special sessions, but we have a disease management contract. And we expect to receive the savings, but it's expected to be later. And so it will move into 03-05. So we have a $600,000 problem there. We have the savings attributable to our practitioner managed preferred drug programs because, again, it's been phased in, and we've had lower than expected physician participation. We have about $1.5 million problem there. On our pharmacy reimbursement, we had originally projected to have proposed, and I can't remember if it was part of the December allotment reductions or Measure 28 because we had movement between those two. We had proposed moving to average wholesale price minus 17%. It appeared we were going to have some major problems with access to pharmacies. And then also on the institutional pharmacy side, which are the pharmacies that serve nursing homes, residential care facilities, there had been emergency board direction to move to increase reimbursement to average wholesale price minus 11%. We just received approval from the federal government a couple of days. I don't know if we've actually received formal approval, but we did receive word from them that they are approving that. So together, since we are not at the level of reduction as that we had originally anticipated, we have about $1 million problem. We had also proposed as one of either the allotment or Measure 28 to enhance our third-party recoveries for drug claims. We are still moving on that, but we've had some systems problems because we're moving from what we call a pay and chase, which means we pay and then go after. If there's a third party, we're moving to an upfront identification, and so we've had some changes there or some delays there. When we originally changed the beginning date of health plan eligibility for those in standard, as you may remember, we had, this is just for OHP standard. In the past, we had gone back to whatever their date of application was. We moved to doing it the first of the following month after eligibility had been determine. We had a claims lag in there. I think that we had not anticipated when we would be able to begin doing that. We have implemented that, but that's close to a $2 million problem. The type A and B hospitals, as I noted, since we were not able to implement that, and that was a little over $1 million problem. When we had assumed some enhanced prior authorization that was part of our Measure 28, we originally had proposed to include some mental health drugs on prior authorization. A decision was made not to implement that. That's about a $1 million problem. The next problem, which is a good problem, is that the tobacco tax revenues are coming in a little less than expected because tobacco use is down, a good thing. But that means we have $1 million less other funds, and so a need for about $1 million of general funds. A small program that we have, breast and cervical cancer program costs, we have fewer people enrolled in that than we had projected. It's about an $80,000 savings on that one. In, I believe it was the November rebalance, we had assumed we would have to pick up with general funds the cost for providing some Medicare Part B premiums for certain groups of low-income Medicare beneficiaries because the federal funding for that was running out. It has been since been restored by Congress, so that's $1.64 million savings that we have as compared to the November rebalance. The next item, which is medical assistance caseloads, I talked about that earlier, about a $22 million savings because of that. As we move to a new to reduced reimbursement for hospitals, we just missed the mark a little bit on our savings, so we have about $170,000 savings on that, increased savings. And then we have the last item there, we have some additional revenues coming in from drug rebates that we had not anticipated and premiums for the standard population, and that could also relate to moving more standard people into fee-for-service where we do get the drug rebate, so that's about a little over $2 million savings. On mental health services, as you can see, this is the issue I talked about of the...
Eugene, Mr. Britton's going to walk us through
okay,
that.
I'll let him walk you through that. Community Human Services, actually, you see nothing there, but we're pointing out we're not asking for 145 positions, so we're avoiding asking you for some more money here. We have some savings in that we're experiencing in our vocational rehabilitation program, about $650,000. Then there are also some additional savings in department-wide support services. Department-wide support services, as you may remember from last week, is Director's Office, Administrative Services, Finance, and Policy Analysis. And then we have two technology-related projects that are coming in below budget, one which is related to, I'm trying to remember what HIPAA stands for, so Health Insurance Portability Accountability, what?
Act.
Thank you, Mr. Naughton.
Privacy.
I didn't. Privacy's in there somewhere, I'm sure. So that's about $1.5 million savings. And then, as you may remember, a discussion around the Medicaid Management Information System project that we're in the middle of. Again, those costs are somewhat under budget. So we have about $1 million savings there. So those are the major puts and takes of the budget.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you. You know, if you could help me understand again, going back to adult and family services issues, why, if we are seeing an increase above projected levels for the food stamp caseload, and why, if we are talking about, you know, so-called savings, why are we not putting those two pieces together? Why are we not? You told us that the food stamp caseload would take an additional 145
mm-hmm.
positions.
Yes.
To meet the projected caseload growth.
Mm-hmm.
Why have you not made the argument to do that? Given the issue with hunger in this state. I just need to understand what we're doing.
Madam Chair and Senator Gordo, I mean, we are serving these people. It is a question of, are we adding additional eligibility workers, or are we telling the current eligibility workers you have to take on more caseload? And we've chosen the latter. So we've had a very sharp increase in food stamp caseloads the last 2 years. Have we received any positions? We received some positions, but basically what we are saying is, as part of management actions, we are not going to request the additional 145 positions. We're continuing, and we are serving those people, but you have the potential of increased error rates because of that. So we are telling staff to take on increased caseload.
Increased error rates and also taking longer to serve the caseload.
I'm looking around to see if someone can. Jim looks like he's at the ready to have an answer to that. Even though he's not dressed correctly.
He's not in
no
pink.
Skin color matches now.
Welcome at the call.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my apologies for my oversight in leaving my fuchsia jacket at home. Jim Neely, Deputy Director. Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, I think generally we have actually, to a certain extent, even improved our processing times in our food stamp application process, primarily because of the specific efforts we've made to do just that. Unfortunately, that has cost us in other areas in terms of the attention I think that we can pay to our TANF caseload, for instance, temporary assistance to needy families. So I think generally thus far we have pretty much kept up with the intake portion of this, but with the substantial rise in caseload that continues to give us problems in terms of how are we going to continue to do that. We are currently distributing over $1 million a day in food stamp benefits in the state, and that has probably doubled in the last 3 years. So, frankly, I'm not sure our food stamp caseload could rise much faster than it is right now. But thus far, we are keeping up with it. But again, we do have concerns about what this is going to do to the quality control error rate, and ultimately to service generally.
Jim, do you recall during e-board how many positions did we add for food stamps? Because I know that we did.
Madam Chair, I think it was 150, and it was a combination of food stamps and Oregon Health Plan positions, and I can't tell you the exact split. But certainly about this time last session, we were having some of these same discussions, as you recall, and at that point we did not add the food stamp staff, and our food stamp caseload has been going up for about 3 years now, pretty sharply.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair.
Representative Bates.
My memory also is, however, that the TANF population had dropped dramatically, and many of the workers who were working caseload for TANF had been transferred to food stamps. Is that still occurring?
Madam Chair and Representative Bates, the TANF caseload has actually risen slightly in the last couple of years. So the rather precipitous decline we've seen from 1994, when we had about 44,000 temporary assistance to needy families households, to what we've got now at about 19,000, that drop has stopped and pretty much evened out. But indeed, on a daily basis, we do trade off in terms of folks that would be earned under the TANF caseload, temporary assistance to needy families. We actually find them working on food stamp intake sometimes.
Thank you. Mr. Naughton.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, George Naughton with the Department of Administrative Services. I'll mention two issues outside of what you have heard so far that I want to keep on the top burner of your recollection. The first one is what is not in this plan or was not addressed as part of this rebalance plan is a notice that the federal government gave us that they were deferring about $46 million of Medicaid expenditures related to our Medicaid upper payment limit. So that $46 million deferral, we are currently working with our attorneys through, and that issue is not addressed in this. So if for some reason our attorneys are not able to come to a positive resolution on our side, we may be back to you asking for some additional resources for this current biennium. is not here.
Have you any indication of when you're going to hear from the Feds, Gene, on the $46 million problem?
Madam Chair, we are working currently with legal counsel on gathering the information, and are they hoping to – actually, Margie is our point person. Do you know when they're planning going back to the federal government?
Not that, but the next stage will be a recommendation from the attorneys by the end, hopefully, of this week.
Okay. Margie, can you speak up so that –
Excuse me, Madam Chair. My name is Margie Johnson. I'm the Acting Assistant Director for Finance and Policy. And I was describing for Gene that the latest word we have after conversations with the attorneys and having prepared or given them a number of documents, that hopefully within about a week they'll have a recommendation to us on the course of action that we should pursue. And at that point, we'll have more information available.
And Madam Chair, there really are two issues. There is there a way for the federal government to be willing to continue paying us that amount of money? Well, this is a deferral. It's not a disallowance. So basically what they have said is we're not going to give you $46 million that you would normally be claiming until we get this issue resolved. And if we're not able to resolve the issue by the end of the fiscal year, we are hoping to, our fiscal year, we would hope to at least see if there's a way that they would be willing to pay us that money. A deferral the last quarter of a biennium is probably the worst possible time because it does cause real cash flow issues for us. So it may be, frankly, this is an issue many states are going through. It's both an issue directly with the Centers for Medicare and Medicare Services, but also the General Accounting Office is overseeing what the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services are doing with states.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Winters. I may be jumping ahead, but a question about positions, FTE.
You are jumping ahead. I want to finish up the $46 million before we jump to that. Representative Westland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question, maybe this is for George, maybe more likely for John, since it's in his write-up, and following up on your point, $46 million out of the last quarter, actually at last eighth of a biennium. I see in John's write-up that it says that as long as we get the money next biennium, it won't have an impact on this biennium, and I'm wondering how, am I reading that wrong?
Madam Chair and Representative Westland, there are two issues. One is the one that George just raised with respect to the Medicaid upper payment limit. And if that revenue is not received during the current biennium, we will have to find some additional general fund to fill that revenue hole. Now, we also, and it hasn't been raised yet, but we will also have a cash flow issue independent of the MUPL problem as well that we're trying to that LFO is trying to address in this rebalance plan. So I think what you're reading, tell me where you are on our analysis and I can.
Well, it's,
are you on page
6 or page 8?
Okay.
First full paragraph up above the developmental disability services, about halfway in the middle of that paragraph. If the revenue,
you're right. Yes.
If the revenue deferral is delayed until the 03-05 biennium while CMS investigates the situation, the CMS deferral will not cause a revenue shortfall during the 01-03 biennium.
That's right. If they give us the revenue during the current biennium, we won't have a problem.
During this biennium.
During the 01-03 biennium. If they ultimately say that this is not just a deferral but a disallowance, we'll have a problem in 03-05. That's correct. If they ultimately decide, no, the methods that you use to calculate the MUPL payments and so on were okay, we will not have any revenue problem at all in this biennium or not, or the next.
Well, wait. Outside of the MUPL issue, we've got a cash flow problem.
Yes, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes.
When, if they delay the payment until next biennium, how does that not impact us this biennium?
Because what's happening here, Madam Chair and members, is that they are saying to us, we are not going to give you $46 million of Medicaid revenue
when we regularly pay the next Medicaid payment to you. And that's probably occurring pretty soon.
We draw down daily.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So what they do is they just don't give you $46 million of your next drawdown. That's how they defer.
In this biennium.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the issue. If it happens in this biennium, then we have a problem in this biennium.
Mm-hmm.
If it happens in 03-05, we're probably okay in terms of cash for a while, but ultimately, if they disallow $46 million, we'll have a $46 million hole in the next biennium.
Madam Chair, maybe if I can, I'll try it. What they've done is say, yes, we know we owe you $46 million, but we don't know if we should have paid you what we paid you a ways back, so we're going to withhold $46 million until we get this issue resolved. And if we get it resolved and it's all okay, fine, you get your money. So there are kind of two tracks we're looking at. Is there a way we can get them to go ahead and pay us that money and then deal with it next biennium? Since we're so close to the end of the biennium, we have a problem.
If I could, I'm running on about five cylinders up here. I understand that. Okay. I understand all that. I'm looking at this sentence halfway up. If the revenue deferral is delayed until 03-05, which means, okay, they finally get around and say, all right, we owe you the money, and we're going to pay you in 03-05, that deferral will not cause a revenue shortfall during the 01-03 biennium. I don't understand that.
I think it's if they say, okay, we're going to wait, and we won't defer now. We'll give you the money. We'll defer it in July.
No, that's not what the sentence says. If the revenue deferral is delayed until next biennium.
No, that's why I said that. You're reading it wrong.
If they decide not to defer until next biennium, we're okay for this biennium.
I see my error.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got
the six cylinder. Just
if they give us the money, we don't have a problem.
Right.
Right.
Right. Now you got the six. You want pink on too today?
I got pink on my tie.
Okay.
I got it.
Okay, you got it.
I'm not reading clearly.
All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome.
Madam Chair, the second point I was going to raise is the second one that Mr. Britton raised, which is we spent a good deal yesterday, Mr. Britton and myself, working through with the department about outside of this Medicaid upper payment limit problem, we have another $30 million cash flow problem, which we think, given where the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendation is taken care of for this current 2001-03 biennium, even though it may be an issue in 03-05. So with that being said, Madam Chair, our recommendation was that you approve this request with the understanding that it is our intention within the Department of Administrative Services to unschedule that $2.3 million overage or excess resources that they have with the expectation that they will use that to manage their cash flow through the rest of this 2001-03 biennium. Since that time, we've had subsequent conversations, as I mentioned, with the Legislative Fiscal Office and the Department. We've read through their recommendations, and we would concur with where they are going.
I'm going to close the public part of the testimony and go into work session. So I'm going to close the public hearing, and I'm going to open the work session on House Bill 5549. Mr. Britton.
Madam Chair and members, thank you. I'd ask if we could hand out Senate Bill 5549, April Rebalance. It's a summary of our recommendations, and it was Sheila's passing it out right now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Smith, you have a question.
No, Madam Chair, I know you're under a difficult situation, but I think I'm going to withhold my question, and you guys can guess what it is when I vote. Thank you.
First of all, let me back up a second and say that what we're doing, again, as Gene pointed out, is rebalancing the department's budget within appropriation lines. And the appropriation lines are along the lines of the old, or the divisions that we've been used to seeing for the last, I don't know how many years, but that's why you'll see adult and family services to children and families, alcohol and drug abuse programs. Those have been reorganized, and we've heard about the reorganization and heard about those budgets over the last several months. But just to make clear, the old appropriation lines are by the divisions and the offices that you see on our summary sheet. The first line in each box shows the net result of the rebalance plan the DHS has just presented. So, for example, in Adult and Family Services, the rebalance plan that they are proposing shows a need of $308,283 of general fund. You see some other fund expenditure limitation increases, a decrease in federal fund expenditure limitations, an increase in non-limited federal funds, and a total funds increase of 18.2, a reduction in full-time equivalents of 0.13. So again, each line, the first line in each box, is what Gene Thorne just presented as far as the department's rebalance plan. The adjustments below the first line in each box have to do with the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendations. And at this point, I would turn to Sheila to talk about Adult and Family Services and services to children and families. I would say that the second issue that Mr. Naughton brought up, that is that there is a cash flow problem within the Office of Medical Assistance Programs, is one that we are trying to address, and we believe that we've taken care of it with this rebalance. The main idea here is to collect or to transfer unscheduled general fund from each of the program areas into the OMAP budget. The unscheduled general fund is primarily that which was unscheduled with respect to the December allotment plan by the governor. Now, the department overall has about $28.4 million of unscheduled general fund within its budget right now. Our proposal is to take that unscheduled general fund along with the $2.3 million of general fund that this rebalance plan shows is not needed within the department's budget for the current biennium, transfer it all into the Office of Medical Assistance Programs, and to cover their cash shortage for May and June. The primary reason it appears that there's a cash shortage has to do with the fact that we added so much tobacco tax revenue into that budget throughout this biennium during special sessions and the like. And the fact that the tobacco tax revenue, there's a two-month lag between the budgeted revenue and when it actually is receipted, when the department actually receives that revenue. So because we increased it so much during the biennium, we are having a cash shortage with respect to tobacco tax revenue. After the biennium is over, assuming that you adopt this plan, all of that will be reversed. They will receive the tobacco tax revenue. They will use it on their accounting records to replace the additional general fund that they'll use to solve their cash problem in May and June. Is that clear as mud? Okay.
I get that one.
All right. Good. At this point, I would turn to Sheila and ask her to talk about Adult and Family Services and services to children and families.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, right before I jump in, I would note that what you have on the spreadsheet here is just a different display of the recommendations that were in the write-up on page 9 and 10. So for those of you that are text-oriented, they're in the write-up. For those of you that are spreadsheet-oriented, they're on this piece of paper. So as John explained, the first line is just what DHS had requested initially in their budget. Although we're recommending approval of that, there are two issues that I'd like to note for the subcommittee. as a result of the various changes within this budget, there are additional temporary assistance to needy family federal funds that the department now has available that they will carry forward into the 03-05 biennium. And for those issues in this rebalance plan where there are carry forward actions like that, or these are continuing adjustments, the subcommittee will see those as we do the quote-unquote reshoot of the governor's 03-05 budget. So when we get to the 2003-05 budget work session, you will see some additional TANF funds over and above the governor's budget level as a result of the savings that they had in the jobs program and the TANF cash assistance. They used some of that to pay for the emergency assistance domestic violence increase, and they have about $5.7 million that's carrying forward into 03-05. The other issue is related to that. By funding the increase in domestic violence emergency assistance in this rebalance plan, when you see the 03-05 budget actions, it will include about a $4.8 million increase in that program above the governor's budget level. So the $1 million in this plan for the rest of this biennium turns into a $4.8 million cost for the next biennium. So that will be an issue that we will want to look at as we get into the subcommittee. But again, we are recommending the adjustments that DHS is proposing with two other changes. One is that the request included as an expenditure limitation adjustment an increase in the federal food stamps benefits amounts, and that is treated as non-limited funds, non-limited meaning that it's not subject to budget appropriation. And so our recommendation is that you pull that out of the appropriation adjustments. They will still be able to spend that money. It's not a reduction of the amount available. It's just that the budget appropriation line does not get increased by that $16.7 million. So it's somewhat of a technical adjustment. And the second adjustment is also a technical adjustment. In the original plan, they had identified the federal funds expenditures for the hearing panel as non-limited expenditures. Those, in fact, are limited expenditures. They're administrative costs that are not a non-limited item, and so I'm reducing their non-limited federal funds request and putting that into the federal funds limitation so that that adjustment would reflect correctly those hearing panel expenditures. And then the third item on here refers to the discussion that John just presented in terms of removing the unscheduled funds in each of the appropriation lines and transferring that to OMAP. So you have a net adjustment shown at the bottom of the box there for adult and family services. For services to children and families, then, we have their DHS requested rebalance plan budget. We're recommending approval of that. There are no major issues there. It's just a pure and simple rebalancing of caseloads, costs, and revenues. And the adjustment for the unscheduled funds moving to OMAP is shown there, and so you have a net adjustment again shown at the bottom of the box there.
Any questions?
So the net adjustment to that would be
Representative Smith T.
Beg your pardon, ma'am. The net adjustment would be a negative $15 million.
The net adjustment, Madam Chair, Representative Smith, would be a negative $15.3 million total funds, correct? And assuming that there are no further adjustments as we get a little bit further into work session, we have some draft amendments to the bill that will show you where the numbers line up.
Okay.
Madam Chair and members, I'll continue with alcohol and drug abuse programs. Again, the DHS proposed rebalance plan would increase the total funds budget for this program area by about $1.1 million. We are, again, suggesting or recommending that the unscheduled funds associated with the December allotment plan of $339,000 be moved, transferred from this program into the OMAP budget. Net adjustments for alcohol and drug abuse $497,003 reduction for general fund, and you can see the others. I would point out the lottery fund reduction. This is associated with a gambling program. Their costs have not been as high as they had anticipated. These lottery funds are dedicated for this purpose and without any kind of statutory change would roll over to the next biennium for that particular use, gambling abuse treatment.
For vocational rehabilitation programs, we are recommending approval of the department's request with the adjustment, again, for the unscheduled funds to help address the OMAP cash flow situation.
Any questions?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the public health programs, we're recommending we take out the $4 million for the tobacco tax that was added twice and adding three positions for the oral health grant for women and children.
Mel?
Question. It had, was there a double reduction for the TURA?
Yes, there was, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, in Senate Bill
5548,
we had removed the limitation associated with that tobacco tax. And as Jean noted, they also removed that limitation of $4 million, but we'd already done it in Senate Bill 5548. Mental health services, you can see the increase of $9.5 million general fund proposed by the department. We are recommending an additional federal funds expenditure limitation decrease. This is something that the department gave to us after they had submitted the original letter, and it is associated with the December allotment cuts. When those general fund was unscheduled, the federal funds associated with that general fund was not removed, and this would do that, the $741,000. Also, you see the unscheduled funds within the mental health services program area of $3.8 million general fund being transferred to OMAP for the cash flow problem. Now, in a moment, I'll talk about the budget note that we're recommending.
The $17 million.
Yeah, I can do that in a moment. With respect to the medical assistance programs, again, the first line is the proposed DHS rebalance. After the original letter was submitted, they came forward with an additional service improvement position elimination. And that's the first line there. It was funded with a combination of general fund and federal funds. And at this point in the biennium is 0.13 FTE, and we're recommending that it be eliminated. You see the other unscheduled funds from all the other program areas flowing in, about $21 million of general fund flowing into the medical assistance program budget. And finally, you see the savings that Gene mentioned a moment ago, $2.4 million of general fund also going in to help solve that cash flow problem. The overall medical assistance program general fund would be increased by $24.2 million. There's an additional, I think about $7 million or so of unscheduled general fund already within that budget. So that's how we would get to the $31 million or so for the cash flow problem. Seniors.
Any questions?
For both seniors and the developmental disability services, you can see what the agency proposed as their within their rebalance. The only adjustments that we are recommending with respect to those program areas is the unscheduled general fund moving into the OMAP budgets. In seniors, it's about $7.2 million general fund, In developmental disability services, it's about $3.9 million of general fund.
For a total of 15.
In the director's office, department-wide support services, you can see our first adjustment. There is additional continuous system improvement positions elimination. As John indicated, the original rebalance plan included five positions being eliminated in continuous system improvement. The department identified then three additional positions. So within this rebalance plan, with our recommended adjustments, there's a total of eight positions that are being eliminated there, and you will see that carried forward into the 03-05 budget again. And then the other adjustment in the director's office is unscheduled funds going to the Office of Medical Assistance Programs. I would note here, if you look in the other funds column for the director's office department-wide support services, you'll see a significant other funds reduction that basically removes excess limitation that's no longer needed because the department has eliminated its prorate, where it basically billed back to the various program areas and divisions in the department for the department-wide services. They've now, with the reorganization, realigned how they're funding the director's office so they don't have that bill back and double counting. And so this other fund limitation is removed from the budget. There are a few other adjustments that still need to be made to completely remove all that limitation, but this is most of that prorate limitation that was previously in the director's office budget. But it's a significant amount. I wanted to mention it so that it was clear that there's not a service reduction accompanying that or a programmatic reduction accompanying that.
Senator Morris.
Just to make sure I understand, the expense has just been transferred to other places.
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, the way it was originally structured is that the director's office was almost purely other funds limitation, and what that the divisions and the program areas in their budget had general fund, other funds, and federal funds in their budget to pay for that. So you had money in the divisions and program offices budgets, and then you had the other funds in the director's office budget to pay for that. So now with the realignment, the other funds in the director's office is going away, but the director's office will instead be showing the general fund, other fund, and federal fund. So basically the source funding that was in the programs and division offices will be moved to the director's office in place of that other funds.
Follow-up?
I'm fine, thank you.
Oh, okay. Any other questions? Is that clear as mud?
The other funds are general funds and federal funds combined. Madam Chair?
Representative Bates?
I don't know if this will help any. The other funds are funds that come that are drawn from the other agencies that are a mixture of federal funds that are matched with the general funds. That's the money that's coming through. That's where we're counting. So we're not trying to count twice.
Mm-hmm. What it is that you will no longer have that double counting.
Exactly.
They had an other funds category in order to get the assessment from the other agencies, and now that they're responsible for the total enchilada, if you will, you no longer have to have that other funds category with inside the agency.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, if you wish, the subcommittee could vote on those recommendations, and then we could go on to the budget note if you'd like.
We can vote on, because we do have a series of budget notes that we need to vote on. So, do we have to finish?
Yeah, you're okay. Assuming everybody votes
assuming
for.
That everyone votes for.
This is an E3.
E3 votes on the Senate side. To vote on the acceptance of the the Senate Bill 5549, April, it says April 2003 rebalance plan, our latest rebalance plan. Are there any objections to accepting the rebalance plan?
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordley.
You may need Senator Carter.
Okay. Then would you find Senator Carter? I believe she's out in the hallway.
Madam Chair, a quick comment.
Yes.
I might.
Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Getting this information earlier would have been very helpful to me. This is very difficult for me to get through, make sense out of. I have a lot of questions that I'm not going to bring up now. I think it's a good plan overall, but I have a lot of individual questions I'd like to have answered. And I got this morning. Others may have got it earlier than that. It's a complex issue. There's some significant issues in here, especially the movement of people from managed care to fee-for-service, medical management system. I know those I'd ask a lot of questions about. We haven't got time right now. I'm giving a yes vote, but I'd like to have more time next time if it's possible.
I think, and hopefully we will get things in a more timely fashion, but in defense of the agency and defense of LFO staff, we've gone through the process in this building where they have been through, I call it, six special sessions, and we've been then moving towards rebalance following those. And so it has been a real budget cut effort, and almost simultaneously also trying to put our budget together that we have to do for 0305, as well as that they're having to work on a reshoot. So we will ask that they try to get it to us ahead of time, but I do know that the crunch that everybody's been under, and I just needed to say that.
Madam Chair, comment?
Yes, Senator Carter.
As a veteran member of this committee, I am certainly aware of the hardships that the department has had and know that the new leadership for you and everything else. Normally, I would be a no on a budget of this nature, Madam Chair, but because I don't support the general process, not the department, the general process of not having funds to take care of the people of Oregon, and I'm going to withhold the right to vote on this on the floor, because we, not the department, we as legislators have been remiss in bringing new revenue forth to be able to take care of the ills of the state. And I want to be able in the future also to be able to see things in advance before I have to vote on them right away. I think it's a matter of not only expediency, but it's a matter of intelligence and knowing what we're doing. And so with that in mind, I will say yes to you today, Madam Chair. But that's the precedence I'd like to set and for everybody to know in the future in terms of my yes vote. Thank you.
Any other comments?
Madam Chair.
Senator Gorley.
I will be voting no. A yes vote for me would mean that I agree with the way that money has been moved around to achieve certain priorities. While I don't agree with what has happened with the food stamp caseload, we heard that there is a question about how projected increase, continuing increase, will be managed. There's a question about the current staff capacity to manage. And I disagree vigorously with what has happened with mental health. The other issues that have been commented on by Representative Bates and Senator Carter, I also agree with. That has everything to do with our process and flaws in our process and the way in which we're asked to make huge decisions in a compressed amount of time. It is dysfunctional. I just need to say that out loud, and I'll be a no vote.
Staff just passed you out the columns, and there are conceptual amendments that go along with the
Madam Chair, if I can just take a minute on these conceptual amendments. What these numbers are, just to give you lots of sets of numbers, what these numbers are in two sections, the numbers that you saw in this spreadsheet and the numbers as totaled in our write-up and our recommendation table, so that it's clear what's happening with the rebalance, the what I call, quote, unquote, normal rebalance actions, and what's happening with the transfer of the funds that were previously unscheduled, we would propose dividing the bill amendments into two sections. The first dealing with what would be the normal rebalance type actions, and then the second dealing with just the transfer of the general funds in terms of the unscheduled monies. So in each case, in each section, there would be no net general fund impact, but in section one, then the other funds and federal funds would total up to the bottom line numbers that you can see on our LFO analysis or on this spreadsheet that we handed out as we talked about the recommendations. So this is what we would propose that the subcommittee approve as conceptual amendments. If the subcommittee approves those, then we would get them drafted in legislative council form, and that's what would go to full committee on Friday of this week.
Representative Tudor Smith.
You're telling me that this, what I've just been handed, is this in a different form?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, yes.
This is the bill, you know, the chapters and verses that they need to put in to make it in bill form.
How long have you had this document?
Madam Chair, we finished that up this morning before the hearing.
It's really difficult for me to absorb all this. This is new to me when I sat down, and this is new to me. And, you know, we're making really huge, huge decisions here that affect many, many lives and families across the state of Oregon. I don't appreciate not having an understanding ahead of time if we could have. I will vote yes on this, but I kind of don't like, kind of feel like I'm a caged lion a little bit on this, Madam Chair, and I'm not going to be, you know.
Well, you know, our options are, and we can delay this and give you time to review it and come back and work on it, give you 2 days to look at it.
I'm going to need...
No, hold on. Because there seems to be individuals who are concerned that they did not have an opportunity to look at this material. And so the option is to either vote it out today or give you time to look at the conceptual amendments and come back and vote it out later. But we do have to get a rebalance document done so that document can pass through the full committee so that they can close out their books, get ready to close out their books
I know.
For the year.
I just want to say, I'm prepared to vote on this today, but not only am I going to need time, I'm going to need a teacher. So unless there's somebody here that wants to spend, I don't know how long it's going to get to me soaking my thick head what I need to know, I'm going to go ahead and vote on this, okay? And maybe somebody can bring me along after the fact, because this is not the only time I'm going to look at this stuff. I know that, okay? So to me, this is very difficult, especially this is the first time I've served on this committee, and everything is new and different. So I'm prepared to vote yes, and if you have the votes, fine.
Representative Westland.
Madam Chair, would you entertain a motion?
I will entertain a motion, Representative Westland.
Madam Chair, I move the amendments as conceptually presented by LFO into Senate Bill 5549.
Representative Westland moves the conceptual amendments into Senate Bill 5549.
Discussion.
Madam Chair, I think it is so easy for those of us who have some experience in this process to move things along because we don't have the patience when we want, because we don't have the patience to let others who are learning it have a chance to digest it. I really am prepared to respond to your statement, and that is that we take some time to look at this issue, but obviously I'm not voted at this particular moment and will certainly not try to railroad things. But I want it very clear, Madam Chair.
to the powers that be in this building, it does not make any sense to be going on and on very fast with these issues, and then we're sitting here, and then at the end we get to vote. Well, you voted for it. Absolutely, I voted for it. But there has to be some kind of means of looking at some kind of revenue to take care of these issues of people in this state, rebalance or not. We are still affecting the lives negatively of the people that we serve in this state, and it doesn't make sense to be going so fast with it in a matter of minutes just to keep the process going. Well, my position is hell away with the process if we are not taking into consideration people's lives. And I'll give you a yes vote today, but in the future it will not be true.
Madam Chair, incorporated within my motion was 2 hours of tutorial help by Representative Page for Representative Page.
Actually, all needs my help, too. This is going too fast.
I don't know if I can afford to pay him.
Senator Gordley is a no. Are there any other no's?
He'll charge you OMAP rates.
Okay. Chair Winters, I'll be casting a yes vote, but in the future I will not cast another yes vote unless the question when I need to ask it can be answered. Thank you. Thank you.
Are there any other no votes?
Madam Chair, are we certain these numbers are correct? May I ask a question?
You can ask a question. You can ask a question to LFO.
I
owe a quarter.
Page 2 of 3 on the spreadsheet.
On which spreadsheet, Frank?
On the long spreadsheet. I'm just trying to track the numbers. Spreadsheet to the summary on the conceptual amendments, looking at public health programs, and I'm probably just not tracking the numbers, but I track the negative $750,000 in general fund. I look at the other funds of a plus 3.167. Is that the addition of the tobacco tax and the other funds? So that's what that is?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Morse, in budgetary appropriations, the tobacco tax money is included as an other fund.
Okay.
We separated it out on the spreadsheet because it's of particular interest.
I'm fine. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Any other no's? Let the record reflect, I believe Senator Gordley is the no. Now, we'll get to the budget note for Senate Bill 5549. Mr. Britton.
It's ridiculous.
Madam Chair and members, LFO is proposing a budget note related to this bill. The budget note would go in the bill's budget report. And I will read it to you for the record. The Department of Human Services is directed to review the procedures it uses to forecast, budget, and track other funds and federal funds revenue, and present a report on its findings and recommendations to the Emergency Board at the time of the Department's first 2003-05 biennial budget rebalance. This is in response to the issue that Gene mentioned as far as the mental health portion of the rebalance plan. It appears that the primary reason that there is a general fund need in that particular budget, and for this particular item it was about $10.5 million of general fund, was some inadequate revenue tracking that's taken place for a couple of years now within that particular program. We believe that the department has solved the problem. The issue had to do with the fact that we had booked some other fund revenue within the budget, but the revenue never materialized. So we were counting on revenue that never showed up. The money was spent, or the expenditures were spent. This particular issue within the mental health rebalance plan takes care of the additional expenditures. This budget note is in response to the whole issue that we need to do a better job on revenue tracking. So that's the basis for this particular budget note.
Senator Carter, and I think we need to explain, some were not here to explain what happened in the process of these dollars, the 17, if you go back and look in your spreadsheet, you'll see under mental health, under 17.25 million dollars. And Gene, Director Thorne, had mentioned that in 1991, I believe it was... 1999. That 17.5 million was set aside to be used for, if I get this correctly, for the purpose of providing funding for children and adolescents in mental health, that they would then go to the Oregon State Hospital. The actual, it's on the books, but it actually did not happen as far as the transfer, if I'm correct, to mental health, to the hospital. The hospital inside of their budget assumed that it was there. And so they did the expenditures without the dollars actually having transferred from there to there. And that's the $17 million that is being fixed today. Senator Carter.
Ms. Thorne, how do we build in the kind of accountability, not only with the state hospital, but with counties in terms of mental health, so that you guys will have a better notion of what is going on, a better view of what is going on with the dollars in mental health. This is not only unacceptable, but I find it one of the most damaging practices that the state could have, that there's an assumption that the money is there and they spend it anyway without any questions. And, of course, it was before your time, so this is not about your watch. But it is about state government's responsibility and state government inability, it appears, to make other people that we're funding more accountable.
Madam Chair and Senator Carter, I think there are really two issues here. The specific issue here around the state hospital, I think, is an issue of the department's practices in not tracking revenues as accurately as they should have and making the connection with the budget. And I think that since Margie has been in her position and Clyde Psyche in his position, because accounting is in administrative services, they've worked on a process now where this type of situation should not happen in the future, where we're tracking the revenues against the budget. And so we're making sure we're finding that kind of situation.
Does this take care of it then?
That's what we're hoping. That's why we did this.
It's for us to report back again. To make
report back. For them to report back to us.
But
there has been a disconnect between the accounting and budget.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought it to our attention. They're wanting to work on it. We're saying bring it back to us and let us see what you have done in the future to try to get a handle on it.
So that means that people that... where we fund, where they pass money through, will now have to reconcile their spending habits with the revenue disbursals from the department. Is that what you used to say?
Mm-hmm.
Now, does this apply to other entities, like other people you fund around the state in mental health?
Madam Chair and Senator Carter, I think that the second piece then really relates to oversight on mental health programs and on mental health managed care. And I think that unless...
Nothing for Barry.
Would you like to come up, Barry, even though you are not dressed in the appropriate kind?
Where's your pink?
What is it that I'm addressing?
Oversight of mental health in the community and use of dollars, if I have it correct.
Yes. Madam Chair, I'm Barry Cast, Assistant Director for Health Services. I'm not sure I understand the question that Senator Carter is asking. I apologize for that.
Senator Carter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, will this budget note not only take care of the situation that happened between the state hospital and the budget, but does it lend itself, overarchingly so, that other people that we fund, counties, cities, whomever else, programs, whatever, does this take care of that too?
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, I'll say that with respect to this particular issue, the problem is really restricted to how we have funded the state hospital and does not affect the community programs. However, we do have good accounting mechanisms for tracking our expenditures to the counties, and I think that those are secure. What's unique in this situation, and I don't mean, Madam Chair, Senator Carr, I don't mean that they're adequate. I mean that we understand the accountability. But I want to say something about this problem because we made the right policy decision, we made the right business decision, mm-hmm. but the way in which the state has operated our state institutions has been dysfunctional. And let me explain why that is. When we decided in 1995 to put mental health services, when you decided to put mental health services into the Oregon Health Plan, we had to decide how we were going to treat those Medicaid-eligible children who were at Oregon State Hospital. Clearly, in a managed care environment, if you don't include those children in the whole health plan, that program would grow substantially. And we were concerned that if we didn't include those funds in the capitation rates, there would be no incentive to serve those children in the community. This was accompanied by negotiations with our managed care plans as we brought that program online, and we were not able to incorporate those dollars in the capitation rates. However, you did include a budget note in your 1999 budget, which directed us to move in that direction through intensive treatment services for children, and you will be reviewing again a budget note, as I understand it, to bring that forward to 2003-2005. The Oregon State Hospital, however, for 100 years has been run as its own program, and the way in which we account for that program has been a very old-fashioned mechanism. And I think what we're saying now is that we need to have a more modern way of accounting for the state hospital expenditures. I'm convinced after looking at this issue, and we have worked on this for months, that no funds were lost, that it was an accounting problem and a budgeting problem and a communication problem within the department, and that very likely the revenues that were not realized at the state hospital were actually used in a prior rebalance plan to solve other problems. It's just that we were not tracking the revenue properly, and I think the mechanism is now in place to do that, and I feel quite confident about it.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gorley.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. The budget note, as it's written, seems to speak to all functions of the Department of Human Services. It doesn't say that this only relates to a review of the procedures of the Oregon State Hospital. So perhaps we need some clarity here that says we're talking about the entire DHS organization and not just the Oregon State Hospital.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, you're right. The budget note is not specific to the Oregon State Hospital. And in fact, what we've been doing with respect to the department has been to say to them, we need a good tracking device for revenue. And every time you come in for a rebalance, we want to make sure that we're on track with respect to other funds revenue that was originally put into your budget. You saw in the discussion that Ms. Thorne presented today that there were a couple of instances where other funds revenue was not as high as we had anticipated, or in other instances where it was higher and it was used to backfill a general fund where it could be. That is all the result of saying to them and the department really working hard to put together a good tracking device that compares the amount of other fund revenue, federal fund revenue in the original budget, and making sure that we actually get it in the door.
And I support this because it's not limited.
It's all inclusive.
That's right.
Madam Chair, I'd move the budget note as we've been discussing into Senate Bill 5549 as presented and read into the record by LFO.
Representative Weston moves the budget note for Senate Bill 5549 into the rebalanced budget bill. Is there any objection, as written, which is all inclusive? Is there any objection? Hearing none. Mr. Britton.
Okay, I think we've done that. Do we want to do this?
Mr. Representative Westland moves Senate Bill 5549 as conceptually amended to the full committee on Ways and Means with the due pass recommendation.
No, he did not move that.
Oh.
Representative Westland moves Senate Bill 5549 as conceptually amended to also include the budget note to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Any objection?
Objection.
Senator
discussion,
Gordy,
Madam
any discussion?
I recognize that this is out of necessity, probably quicker than many of us sitting behind the dais appreciate, many in attendance appreciate. But I want to go back to something Senator Carter said. These are difficult decisions. And as Representative Smith said, these do affect many lives of real Oregonians. But this, and as difficult as these decisions are, is a walk in the park compared to what will be coming if there isn't additional funding for these budgets for the next biennium.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is just a small snapshot, one frame out of a full-length movie of human pain and suffering. If this body, not this committee, but this body as a collective being and the wisdom there represented for the benefit of Oregon, don't figure out how to make Oregon, Oregon. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further discussion?
Senator Smith, Tootie Smith.
Okay, I'll be a senator for now.
Representative Smith, I just put you back to
work. Thanks. I'd just like to say I'm really impressed upon the folks. If we could get the information delivered ahead of time, and in my case, put a name and a phone number at the bottom of the page so I know somebody who I can call.
Further discussion?
Representative Bates.
Madam Chair, I'm going to vote yes on this, but I want people to understand that we'll have a yes vote today. That in future budgets we're going to be seeing for 03 and 05 of this nature, I will not be a yes vote on. We have to balance by revenue. We're going to do this because we have to. We have projects moving. We have to keep the agencies functioning. I'm not happy with how slowly, or how quick we had to work with this, and how slow it was to get information out. I have a letter dated April 25th here that I never saw until this morning. It went to the co-chairs, and I would have got started my discussion and my thoughts on it. So there's a problem with process. There's a problem with what we're doing, and in the future I will not be a yes vote for this.
Okay. With that, Senator Gordy is recorded as a no. Pass.
Okay.
Just who then do you want to cut in half?
Delighted, Madam Chair.
Representative Westland, of course.
After all that talk.
Well, you're carrying the Senate then.
Senator Carter will carry to the Senate. Couple things, because we are getting this committee in what happened today and the information coming forward. A couple things I would like to ask you to do. And I would like to ask you, when you get the information from Legislative Fiscal, or that you ask from the staff, that you actually do review it, that you actually do start doing your homework so that when you come to the body that it can be where we're ready to act. We will be moving into some very serious discussions. And, you know, the staff has had to call people to come to this committee. I sent you letters to tell you, to ask you to be on time, to ask you to start doing your work. Our staff works very, very hard, and I think we need to respect that. I do apologize that today we needed to get this rebalanced. We will also have a reshoot coming to us. We will have, in the coming days between now and before we adjourn out of this building, this committee will have the biggest, heaviest lifting in this whole entire process. And so I'm just asking, I want you to know that, and there are going to be some hard and tough choices that will have to be made by this body, and there's going to have to be some decisions made by this full body that haven't been made to date. You know, we've talked about, we deal with the real faces on this committee. Some of the other committees do not. We deal with the real pains in this committee. Some of our other colleagues do not. I said in one of our hearings when we were doing the DD, Developmental Disabled hearings, that I wished and hoped that every 90 member in this chamber could be here to see the faces. They're not here to see the faces, and they're not here to see and hear what we hear. And I think it's maybe incumbent upon us to share what we know with the rest of this with this building. But I do ask you to also do your homework, to come in prepared in the committee. And if you have questions, if you ahead of time, the you can either call Legislative Fiscal Office or call my office to get some of your questions answered. This is a very complex agency, and I recognize that. But I also recognize that between their staff and the LFO staff, that they've all been gracious and willing to answer questions when they're asked of them. So I put that there because I know that our staff really want to make certain that we're informed. And that also goes with the Jean and her staff. Jean has been new, but I want to commend you. It's the first time that I've done a rebalance that we haven't talked about having to go and find dollars or having a deficit, that they worked very, very hard with inside their budget to try to find some solutions to some very difficult problems. And I need to put that on record, Jean, because to me it is the first. And I know the rest of us have been here over time, and we know that normally it's just the reverse, that we're having to find some dollars in this environment where the co-chairs have said they don't have any to give me. Jean stepped up and said, well, I will ask our staff to do more. So I want to thank you, Jean, for helping us with the rebalance. And with that, you are going to have some time to do some of your background research, because I don't have anything scheduled, do I? But I will begin to look at bills that are done in Ways and Means to see which one of those we will start to hear while we prepare for the next phase, and that's to begin our work sessions. I will try to get a schedule to you as quickly as possible on when your various schedules, which budgets we will start working on. They didn't. And I just got that today. I will try to get you a schedule of the work plans, which bills we will be working when, so that you can have some advance notice to begin working on those. And if there's any further discussion, and welcome home, Representative Bates.
Thank you.
With that, we are adjourned.
So why don't you do that?
Yeah, I don't think.